save the dog.
Welcome, all those loyal to the Empire and rebel scum alike. This is another episode of Sith Talk. I am your host, the Lady of Lore, Lindsay. And with me today is the man who needs absolutely no introduction, but we're in the introduction part of the show, so I have to give it to him. We have Brandon. Brandon, how you doing?
Hello there. How are you doing?
That was pretty good.
I've practiced. I got the James Arnold Taylor one down. I don't know about the Ewan McGregor one.
Yeah. No, not the Ewan McGregor, though, too. What about the Alec Guinness one?
Well, that's just another level I would not even try.
Yeah. For many, many reasons. Mostly, we're not great at accents.
No. No, and I would probably end up offending somebody, so.
Yeah. That sounds about right. No, but we're lucky. This is two episodes in a row for us. Typically, this would be Zach's week. The Lord of Lore, to be on the show. But he had a bit of an accident. So having a little trouble speaking right now. So Zach, we hope you have a very speedy recovery. We miss you on the show, and everyone go send him some good vibes through the force for a nice speedy recovery.
Yeah. He's going to have a nice Sith Lord scar right there for him.
Yeah.
Very,
you know,
Anakin.
He does. I don't think I told him this, but when he sent us the picture of his lip all stitched up, I don't know about you. The very first thing I thought of was Kylo Ren's helmet. I was like, oh, and that's actually where I got the idea for the theme for this episode, because he sent it to us like 5 minutes before you and I were going to think about what the topic was this week. And that's kind of what piqued my interest and what sparked the idea was I was thinking of Kylo Ren's helmet.
So this episode brought to you by Zach's face.
Thanks for taking one for the team there, buddy.
we better get more than the usual number of listeners on this one to make it worthwhile. Tell a friend, leave a rating and review, all that stuff. Get it out there.
Oh, poor Zach.
Goodness gracious.
But no, you know what? Before we kind of hop into things, I do have to ask you, for our listeners, you're really the only one on Sith Talk who stays up to date with the Bad Batch.
Yeah.
So give us kind of just some thoughts right now. I don't even know how many episodes are already. I feel so disconnected from that show. So give us a little recap of where we're at in the season, what's been going on, and just some of your early thoughts.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're four episodes in across 2 weeks. We had a three-episode premiere, and it was very much a old-school kind of Clone Wars situation where you had a three-episode arc. That was a lot to watch at one time, but, you know, so I didn't get to watch it at my normal early hour of the morn, but I did come home and watch that, and it was definitely worth the wait. I would say it's the premiere episode is... I gotta say, probably top five Bad Batch episodes so far. Definitely the best premiere to date, even better than the actual series premiere. We got episode four last week, and we're really getting to see a lot of... So I'll kind of go into light spoilers here for anybody who wants to skip ahead a little bit. But we've got Crosshair and Omega learning to work together. We're really getting a good vision of everything that Omega has learned over the previous two seasons in her time with the Bad Batch. She's having to take all of those lessons and apply them, and we're really seeing her her come into herself and really grow up. You know, they've even changed her look a little bit to visibly show us that transition. And so Crosshair is having some difficulty with that. There is a great cliffhanger at the end of episode four that I'm really excited to see how that all comes together. If you've seen the show, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If you haven't, I'm not going to ruin that moment for you. But, you know, it's very clear what they're doing with this season as far as Omega becoming who she is capable of being and who she, I think, was always meant to become. But she was, you know, wanted by the Empire, always on the run, you know, had her older brothers there to take care of her and protect her. And so it's kind of a situation similar to when like Ahsoka gets caught on the Trandoshan planet and they're hunting her and she has to lead the other Padawans. And it's, you know, her taking all of those lessons Anakin taught her and having to apply them to survive. And we see that with Omega this season. So I'm excited about where they're going with her. There's a lot of connections to the sequel trilogy and the Mandoverse that have been dropped already this year, which is really exciting to see how M-Counts are going to play a role. And there was a mention of Project Necromancer. So we're hopefully going to see some more of that. And hopefully that is a precursor to us getting more of that in Mando and other stories so that we can really flesh out. We kind of have an idea of what Project Necromancer is, but really to flesh out the details. And I think as far as Bad Batch is concerned, Omega and the situation surrounding her is going to really decide which direction that goes. And I think also, you know, my personal prediction, just to give that, is that something that happens with the Bad Batch is going to be the reason why they're still having to work on that project some 20, 30 years later. And when we get to Rise of Skywalker, you know, you have a clone of Palpatine who is, you know, capable of using the Force, but is also, you know, has to be kept alive by these machines. So he obviously wasn't completely successful. So I think we're going to see something with that that will connect to Mando and season four, and maybe even the Mandalorian and Grogu movie, which could be really exciting.
So is this though becoming one of those things where you have to watch Bad Batch in order to fully understand stuff in Mando and in the Grogu movie? Or is it just going to be, oh, okay, if you know it, it's cool, but it's not like you absolutely have to watch it?
I think it will be somewhere in between there. I think there'll be stuff in Bad Batch that we learn that will enhance watching of future shows. But I don't think they're foolish enough to expect everybody watching The Mandalorian to watch The Bad Batch. The Star Wars animated side has a very loyal viewing body, and we stick with it. You know, we watch it all the time. They know they have a built-in audience there, and that built-in audience is watching Mandalorian. But I don't think they expect it to be the reverse, where everybody who's going to the theater to see Mandalorian and Grogu, or who's watching, you know, one of the highest rated shows over the past 5 years to watch the three seasons of this animated show to figure it out. So they're tying things in. I think what will happen is it'll be kind of like the High Republic, where you can read just the adult novels and you understand completely what's going on. But if you add in the YA novels, if you add in the junior novels, if you add in the comics, you get an extra level of the story and stuff, and you get maybe a side story of another threat that was going on with the Drengear kind of situation. So
yeah.
I think that's kind of going to be their model going forward. You know, you and I have talked about that the High Republic kind of seems like a testing ground of, like, they found that, you know, dedicating certain people solely to a particular project works, and having a brain trust that handles this more or less department of Star Wars is really beneficial. And so I think they're applying the lessons learned with the High Republic and its success to these other areas. And that's why we're having what seems like a much more deliberate plan in how they're rolling out, you know, especially the stories surrounding Rise of Skywalker, because you and I have different points of view on Rise of Skywalker, but it's objective that it took things in a direction we didn't expect. And it left a lot of questions, especially surrounding Palpatine and his return. And we want answers to those questions. And so I think they're being very intentional of, we had this unexpected thing fall in our lap where we really, you know, people can argue about it. I really don't think they had a plan to bring Palpatine back the whole time, and it kind of fell in their lap. And it's like, okay, let's do what Star Wars does, which is unravel this puzzle in a backwards fashion. You know, we had the Clone Wars, just a mention. George had no idea really what the Clone Wars was. And it was like, all right, cool, let's go figure it out now. And we'll try to tell this story in a compelling way. I think that's kind of what we're getting.
Okay, I can live with that. Just because my fear really is I'm going to have to sit here and get through all three seasons of The Bad Batch in a limited amount of time in order to feel like I'm fully up to speed on everything I need to be. So I can live with that if it's the case. I do want to ask you, though, just in terms of this season and the other two seasons, how do you think it's shaping up? Like, when you look at the first four episodes of this season, are you more excited for the rest than you were in season one or two? Or do you think it's falling a little short in comparison?
That's rough to say because we know it's the last season. And so it puts an extra weight on it. I think these four episodes have gotten me probably more excited about the rest of the season than I've been before.
Okay.
But I think a lot of that is knowing that we have to have answers to certain questions that it's asking by the end of the season. Whereas in season one and season two, it was unknown like when these threads were going to be brought to fruition, you know?
It is really nice anytime, not just with this or with Star Wars, but anytime you know that something is the final season going into it. And it's strange because it does put that timer on things and it does make things seem very ominous and you're not going to start diving into new stories. But it is nice when you understand, hey, look, maybe we're not having these crazy progressions and all of these new things open up because we're winding down.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that worked really well for Rebels. And I think, again, you know, when you look at the Clone Wars kind of ending abruptly versus Rebels being planned for the four seasons that it was, and then still being able to go back and tell more stories with those characters. Again, I think these people are being paid a shit ton of money to do this, and I don't think that they are idiots. As frustrated as we can get with some of the decisions they make, these are not dumb people making these decisions, and I think that they learn from their mistakes and their successes, you know, in a similar fashion. And Rebels, I think, was a good lesson when you compare it to, you know, what happened with Clone Wars and even arguably what happened with the sequel trilogy, where a lot of people felt like, okay, there's still some threads that were left unanswered, and this is supposed to be the end point of the Skywalker saga. So I personally think three seasons was always the plan. You had your intro rising action, you had your darker middle chapter. Now things are really, you know, still pretty dark at the beginning of this season, but I think we're going to go in a direction where, you know, we not necessarily get a happy ending because we are talking about clones pre, you know, the original trilogy and the sequel trilogy, but we do know that some of them survived, and so there is a level of hope and optimism that hopefully this will not be the most tragic ending. Like, maybe we'll get some happiness somewhere in there.
Yeah, tragic is okay, but just not the most tragic.
Yeah, like, let's not completely destroy the hope that Star Wars is supposed to be about. Because if there's a place that they could do that, it would be the Bad Batch. Like, you could just completely, you know, have a complete and utter genocide against all the clones. Because, I mean, as much as it sucks that it, you know, would make sense, it would make sense.
It's so funny you say that, though, because I mean, I even watched Resistance, right? Like, this is the first time ever where I'm not completely bought in and hyped up about a Star Wars entity. Like, if I made it through that show, I should be able to make it through anything, and I can't do it with Bad Batch. And I think it's because, and I didn't realize until you just said this, but to me, it is the most childish of the shows in a way that the cartoon elements are really amplified, and it's just done in a way that bothers me. But yeah, you're kind of dealing with, by nature, the darkest subject matter that I think we've ever had in an animated series, just because, like you said, you could have that genocide and it completely makes sense for the story. So it's just so weird that the reason I don't like it is because in my mind it's too childish. And yet this is the heaviest and darkest subject matter.
It's interesting that you say that, because I would not have ever, when you compare it especially to Resistance, called it the most childish of shows. Resistance...
That's brutal.
I love Christopher Sean. He's a great human being. I appreciate him coming on our show when he did. But that show is just brutal. It's just not watchable, in my opinion, at least when you compare it to the other Star Wars shows that we've gotten. And I've always said, you know, Star Wars doesn't talk down to its audience. It trusts the people who are watching, whether they're adults or children, to be able to handle the mature ideas that it deals with. And we're seeing that now. And maybe, you know, maybe because of who we have leading the show, like Omega is more of a kid than Ahsoka or Ezra ever was, or ever were, which is, I guess I could see it from that angle, but just like we did with Ahsoka and Ezra, we're seeing a great maturation of the character. And I think they're very intentional about how they are doing that. So yeah, I mean, she's technically, I think she's like 8 or 9 at the start of the series. So she's, you know, significantly younger than Ahsoka or Ezra were at the beginning of theirs. They were in their, you know, mid-teens. And so it does create a different dynamic. You also have Wrecker in there, which is a very, you know, he's a big teddy bear kid in and of himself. So there are more kid elements, I think, than maybe we've gotten previously, but I would not call it the most kid-centric show that we've gotten at all.
Yeah, Wrecker is the one, right?
Yeah.
Honestly, I think that's what did it for me.
Well, what's cool is he's really, he's still Wrecker, but he's mellowed out a lot more. There is a scene at the beginning of this season where he was pushing caution when at the beginning of the series, you know, even going back to season 7 of Clone Wars, he was like, I just want to blow stuff up, you know? And now he's like, maybe we shouldn't rush into things because of X, Y, and Z. So okay. There's more maturation across the board for all of these characters.
Yeah, very cool. Well, you'll definitely have to keep us up to date with all things Bad Batch, since you really are the only one here on Sith Talk. I know everyone else over at Clashing Sabers and across the other shows are keeping up with it. But Zach and I really rely on you to tell us what we need there and what we're missing. So thank you. But really, Zach and I are just so excited for The Acolyte. So as of now, you know, the rumor, and again, rumor, is June 5th. So it's even good to know that with Bad Batch, they also did the 3-episode release and then single episodes week to week. It seems like that's going to be the standard from this point on. So hopefully we get that with Acolyte, because I would not mind sitting down and having 3 hours of The Acolyte when that first comes out, whenever it is. Hopefully, Chupa.
I don't know about that. It's one thing when it's a 22-minute show and you're looking at an hour to an hour and 15, as you were with Bad Batch. Andor was a lot to take in at once. Like, I guess I appreciated that they did the 3 episodes because, you know, it is cool to get that much Star Wars at one time. But I don't know if that's the best move when you're introducing all of these new characters and stuff. Like,
I'm trying to think, though. Andor, let me check, because I think the 2nd episode of Andor is, like, crazy short, and that's why they were able to do it. Because Ahsoka, they did 2 episodes.
They did 2, yeah. And I'm even 2 with The Acolyte, I would rather not. I'd rather just have 1.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I would rather have it for a longer time than more at once. Let us sit and, you know, really digest what we get in the 1st episode. You know, I even would have preferred that with Ahsoka. You know, make Ahsoka end a week later than it was, you know, originally scheduled. If we're going to get a dual episode situation, I'd rather that be the last 2 episodes where you really ratchet in, you know, the conclusion of the story. But even still, like, even with the animated stuff, I'm not a huge fan of the double releases. Like, if you have a Twilight of the Apprentice situation where you're calling it 2 episodes, but it's really just 1 episode, that's one thing. But it hasn't been that level of these stories go together. And I think, you know, it's just better. Let us have more time with it. Let us digest it. Why are we rushing through these things? Again, like going back to the High Republic. Take your time. There's no reason. We're going to be here. The audience is going to be here if you tell a good story. Putting out 2 episodes at a time or 3 episodes at a time is not going to get you more of an audience. It's just going to be something that you can advertise as a cool, you know, one-off thing for this series. But I'm not a huge fan of it kind of becoming the expectation.
I think, though, a lot of it is just retention. And they're probably worried about if the 1st episode isn't incredibly captivating, because if you remember, like, the 1st episode of Andor, it was really good, but it didn't have that oh my god moment at the very end. So that's why they had to release a few episodes. So this way you actually were bought in and you had that aha moment right there at the end.
So write stories that have that, you know, like I think
I knew you were going to say it. And
if that's the result you want, right.
And I was like, ah, shit, I can't argue that. Yeah.
Like that would, yeah. I mean, it's like, even with Bad Batch, you know, the three episodes were, you know, a complete arc. And at the end, we got to see something we had been thinking was going to happen later in the season. But if you had made me wait two more weeks for that, I wouldn't have been upset. I would have probably liked it more because it would have felt like there was more of a buildup, you know, especially in the modern day where we're talking about this stuff all the time. You know, let the socials do their job for you.
It's true. Yeah. Yeah. It's not like, you know, the olden days of, you know, the late 90s where if you watched an episode, you had to wait to go into work to talk about it or wait till you see friends over the weekend to talk about it. This really is just constantly in your face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, I am realizing with this break that we're having in the books where we're not really getting a whole bunch of releases at once, the value of waiting and letting us go back and revisit things. Because like, I'm going back and rereading Resistance Reborn. I forgot how much I really enjoyed that book. Like, it was just another book that had happened. And now I'm thinking about it, rereading it and having this time and reflecting on it. And I just really am enjoying it. And that has become more and more of an anomaly as they're pumping out more and more content. And I'm really hoping this shift of, you know, focusing on telling good stories over quantity of stories is going to really pay off. And we're going to see that. Because I would rather have... I'd rather have one really good Star Wars show a year than three mediocre ones. You know,
definitely.
Rewatch it again and again. Like, don't... The oversaturation of the brand doesn't come from making quality content. It comes from making mediocre content to a great quantity. And that's something we need to pay attention to. Something, you know.
Yeah, no, it's a valid point. But hey, I am happy, though, that... I didn't realize you were rereading Resistance Reborn, but I'm happy that you are and that you're in Bad Batch now, which is kind of crossing over a few different, you know, timelines between prequels and the original trilogy. And we've been doing a lot more talking about the prequels because I really do want to get into this discussion that has stemmed from Zach's face. and his Kylo Ren looking face right now. But there are, throughout all timelines, throughout all mediums, we have so many different, we'll just say villains, right? Obviously, you have anyone from Darth Maul, Darth Vader, to now we have the Nile, right? And we have everything in Legends. And I was really thinking a lot about why certain villains or groups do what they do and really who is, I don't want to say redeemable, because sometimes it's not that they're even looking for redemption. But my question to you is, with all the villains, with all the groups, and this can be Legends, canon, be it what you will, who would you say is the most vindicated in their actions, or you can understand why they chose the path they did? Is there really one villain or group that kind of sticks out to you where you're just like, yeah, I would probably do the same thing?
So when you brought this up, I thought this was going to be a much harder answer for me to find, because we do have... Like you said, we have a ton of really great villains. We have villains that we care about what happens to them, and we care about the stories that they're in. You know, we have things like, you know, Anakin becoming Darth Vader. Like, we root for him to have his redemption. We have situations like Maul, where you don't root for him, but you know, you want this character who was kind of wasted in the movies to be able to be a part of great stories and things like that. But when you really think about kind of who is more understandable, whose methods are or philosophy rather is more understandable, I immediately start thinking of Thanos, because to me that is the standard of an understandable villain. For those of you who don't know, like, Thanos wants to destroy or wipe out half of the universe, not for power or the sake of wiping out half the universe. He sees that as his way to save the universe, because there are so many mouths to feed and not enough, you know, food to do it. And so if you cut that in half, you know, eliminate a major problem. Obviously, like, things don't go that way. And then in Endgame, we get him, you know, changing his philosophy to thinking he has to wipe out everybody and just start from scratch. And it goes too far, you know, as any good villain does. But you can look at his philosophy and go, you know, you're not wrong. When you look around our world, like, we've got, what are we at, like 8 billion people now? Like, that's a lot of mouths to feed, and we can see the impact it's having on our world. You don't necessarily believe in the way that they're handling it, though. Like, I don't want half of the world to just die off so that everybody else can eat. Like, how do you make those decisions? How would that even work? Like, it's just a mind-boggling thing to actually approach. Like, we've got to find other answers rather than the approach the villain takes. So I was thinking about that, and I was thinking, okay, so who's pure evil? You automatically eliminate, you know, Palpatine and the Empire, because that is pure evil manifested. And sorry, but I'm not rooting for any Nazi parallel, which also then eliminates the First Order. Kylo is an interesting conversation, but I don't know if he really has a true purpose behind what he's doing in terms of trying to complete a mission versus just feeling lost as a human being. So to me, that's more understandable, but not necessarily justified. You could say the same thing about Maul, you know, being Sisyphus. I relate to him a lot, of just constantly rolling that boulder up the hill and it just continually falls back down. And what do you do when you feel like you can't make your way out of that? Those are empathetic, those are understandable situations, but I don't think that it justifies the approach that they take. Which led me then very simply to the prequels and Count Dooku and the Separatists. Because if you take the Palpatine out of it, and you just look at what the Separatists wanted and what Dooku was really fighting for, it was for less corruption. It was for more unity across the galaxy. It was for the politicians and the bureaucracy to fall to the power of the people. All of these ideas that caused them to break off, you know, because most of the people involved in the Separatist movement were regular people, were Nina Bonteri and people like that, who really wanted better for the galaxy. Now, you had the other side, the seedy side of the Separatists, that were obviously, you know, the corporations pushing for power and stuff. And so there's really two sides to the Separatists. You know, you have the villain Separatists, but then you have the Separatists who Ahsoka learns are normal people. You know, she meets Lux and realizes, like, he's not that different from me. And that is a situation where you go, okay, maybe they lost their way in the same way that Thanos kind of lost his mission of helping the galaxy, and it became very toxic and unhealthy and murderous, to just call it what it is. The Separatists became that, but I think if you had the Separatists without the influence of the Sith, they are the most understandable and relatable of the villain units that we get in the galaxy. And then, of course, you have Dooku, and, you know, there's the debate about Dooku and whether or not he's fully a Sith or whatever. You can continue to have that debate, but he left the Jedi Order and went to Palpatine before he was corrupted to try to find a solution to the issues that the Republic was having with the bureaucracy owning everything and, you know, money really winning votes instead of, you know, the people having a say. We saw him, you know, wanting to help his planet in Dooku Jedi Lost and leaving to have a relationship with his sister. So he's very understandable. And again, good villains to me come down to, do you understand their motive, and are they somebody that you could see yourself becoming? And I can't see myself becoming somebody in the Empire. I can't see myself becoming somebody in the First Order. But I can see myself being tempted by somebody who promises a better future, yeah, and really gives that to you.
I'm not even shitting you. That was my answer too. For different reasons, luckily. Well, sort of. But yeah, to me, when I think of who is the most, you know, vindicated and like, yeah, you might have a point, it is the separatists. Because, like you said, they're going at this for a really good reason. It's not that the separatists want power for themselves. They don't even want, you know, any extreme dictatorship or anything. They're just saying, hey, look, we don't like what's going on here. We just want the right to go on and do our own thing, which is so logical. And it's not a crazy demand. But for me, the other reason that I think the separatists are as vindicated as they are is even in war, they don't really go to these like insane extremes because they're using a fucking droid army. Like they're not even saying like, hey, look, we're going to put people out here. We're going to fight as hard as we can. We're going to risk these lives to get everything we want as quickly as we want. They're saying we're not even going to sacrifice our own people. We're not going to ask anyone to do this. We're going to go the route of what has the least amount of casualties for our people. And I just think that's such a sane thing to do, right? It's like using drones now, but better. And I don't know. It's just the fact that they seem like the more humane army and the more humane fighters making these decisions, that to me, I'm just like, yeah, I think if I were in Star Wars, I would probably be a separatist too. I kind of get it.
Yeah. And I mean, you bring up the droid army, and when you compare that to what the Republic did, which was literally breed people just to die.
Yeah.
There's definitely some of that feeling in our world today of like, you know, we want a large population so that more people will serve in the military so that we have more people to, you know, go and fight our wars. And it's like, is that the right approach? Or, you know, could we stand up for what we believe in a different way, in a way that doesn't cost as many lives? And that's something a lot of people are pushing for and something that the separatists didn't. And they're never I think you have to separate the Confederacy for Independent Systems from the Dooku and the Trade Federation and stuff. You know, what we see in the movies and what the separatists actually, you know, were in philosophy are kind of different things. And, you know, thanks to the Clone Wars, we got to see that. But that's kind of what makes them compelling too, is you go, God, I kind of wish I could do that. And I wish I could just break away from the things that I don't believe in and start to build something new. And yet to do that would, you know, you end up having to shake hands with people you don't necessarily want to shake hands with, or people who have different motives than you, you know, like at the end of the day, Dooku is a villain for a reason. Like, he's not a good guy. Like, just because some of his ideas are understandable, just because he tells Obi-Wan the truth, doesn't mean that he's a good guy. You know, just because he has a philosophy that's not as bad as the most evil person to ever walk the face of the galaxy, does not make him a good guy. He's a bad guy, and he makes bad choices, and he does bad things. But again, it's kind of like a two-sided coin, and the sides are, it's not even a two-sided coin. It's two very different coins that you're dealing with when you're dealing with the separatists. And we see that yeah, kind of causes problems in what they're able to do across the Clone War.
I mean, I think that for the argument that we can make for the separatists, I think the easiest thing to do is to constantly remind ourselves that Dooku was a Sith masking himself as a separatist, not the other way around. So I think that you don't need to say Dooku's the exception here, because I wouldn't align him necessarily with the separatists. But one thing he did as, you know, the leader of the separatists, but again, he was just masked as it, he was a Sith. And one of the reasons why I think the separatist movement is so compelling is the Jedi seemed, and the Republic seemed, to want to fight that battle on battlegrounds, right? They wanted to go into war. They, like you said, bred people to die. The Separatists, from what you can tell in the Clone Wars, they seemed pretty willing to fight most of their battles on the Senate floor. That was almost more of like an intellectual war for them than it was anything else.
Yeah, I mean, we even see, you know, them propose peace talks, and the Republic is not having it. We see the arc where Padme has to sneak off to go talk to Nina Monteri and have her put a motion, and the motion is passed until Dooku and the Sith manipulate it. So, yeah, that's a very a very good point. And
even, oh man, what's the first one? This is my biggest gripe with the Queen's trilogy.
Queen's
is it
Shadow?
Queen Shadow?
Yeah.
That's the first one, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I can never remember if it's Shadow or Hope is the first one. But I think Queen Shadow, or I'm sorry, no, it is Queen's Hope. Queen's Hope does a good job of showing, like, there's some stuff going on here that maybe the Republic doesn't want to open their eyes to. They don't want to engage in certain discussions, maybe because they'll lose, maybe because they're too power hungry, but be it what you will, the Separatists didn't really have much of a choice there. Like, they wanted to do this the right way. They wanted to do this on the Senate floor, and they couldn't.
Yeah. And we, I mean, not to get super political, but Star Wars is political. And if you're going to deny that, I don't, you haven't watched the movies.
Bad news, buddy.
But like, the story that Lucas told in the prequels was very intentional, and we see it in our world today. We see it in our own country today, where one side wants to have, you know, conversations about things that are very real and problems that are going to continue to challenge our country and our world and the unity that we have for generations to come. And the other side is like, willing to do anything to paint them as the bad guys, forget whatever reality actually is. And I mean, we see the danger that that can cause. That doesn't end well for either side. And that's not saying that, you know, both, there's a good side and a bad side. I think there are people who are more easily swayed by the opinions of people in power and those who are not. And I think sometimes both sides can sway a little too far in those directions. And there needs to be a come to the middle of, okay, first of all, why are we putting these people in positions of power? And, you know, why are we letting them lead us? Not necessarily saying they're all bad, but we need to know why we actually, you know, are letting them be the people that lead us instead of doing something different about it. That's kind of something that the Separatists had to deal with, is like, okay, they never really faced why Dooku is the one that gets to be the face of things. And I think a lot about, you know, what happens if Maul doesn't die? Does Maul become the face of the Separatists? Because that's a very different situation that we're talking about, where, you know, you have essentially a monster going and leading this rebellious movement. Does the philosophy change around there, or is it still, you know, is it about the mission and not about the person leading? And that's kind of a interesting question. I think
that's a great
point. I've never asked.
No, we haven't, but what a great point that is.
I don't think it was Maul's purpose to die in The Phantom Menace. Like, I think he was supposed to survive and continue on. Like, he knows about the Clone War and knows that, you know, Palpatine was planning on playing both sides. And why let him know that if you're using him as fodder to just go and die as a way to reveal yourselves back to the Jedi? So I think it maybe, you know, things, there was a plan B with Maul alive, but at some point it had to lead to the Clone War, and he knew about the Clone War. And so what do you think? What do you think the Separatists are if Maul becomes the face of it?
I mean, I truly believe that the only kind of way out of it would be Palpatine would have to kill Maul. Like, you're so right. You cannot possibly have the separatist movement if Maul is alive?
Can you have a different movement, though?
I don't see how you could. Honestly, because then we're getting so into Nile territory, really, of just where our movement is going to be that of chaos, that of anarchy, and just your sole driver is hatred for the Jedi at that point. I do not possibly see having any kind of successful movement with Maul, which leads to my question of what the fuck was Palpatine doing, right? Why would he be training Maul in the ways he did? You know, I think we've seen other Sith who their training really is in secrecy. It is in conning people and accumulating these resources, whereas Maul is treated almost just like a guard dog of sorts. So it's a pretty crazy question, and one that I'm really going to have to think about, because that's an insane point. But I do want to ask you, just because since we do agree on the separatists, I'll put you on the spot now too. Which villain or group of villains would you say is the absolute least vindicated, and why?
I think the First Order, because the Empire is all bad. There are no redeeming qualities of the Empire. The First Order took what the Empire did and made it worse. They stole children. Yes, I know the Jedi stole children too. That's a different conversation that we're having. If, you know, that's not this conversation, but they can, you know, they stole children to build a military. They were purely in it for power and destruction and hatred on a level that just was bigger than the Empire. Like, the Empire itself was bigger and it had a more wide-ranging impact, but I mean, you can look at it literally. The Empire blew up a planet. Starkiller Base blew up a system. You know, like, the Empire overtook a broken government. The First Order blew one up. You know, it's just like the parallels are there. They did very similar things, but doing that to Hosnian Prime and causing what they did.
Then the Empire was born from the right intentions of the separatists, whereas this was, it wasn't even so much born, but resurrected, just because of how many people were just disgruntled, you know, it's coming from all the disgruntled former employees of the Empire, just being like, hey, we want our jobs back, you know?
That's
not really the best reason for doing things, let alone blowing up all these planets.
It was purely formed off of hate, you know? Like,
yeah.
The Empire, as much as it hurts to say, the people that allowed the Empire to come about, while they were blinded and manipulated, they at least believed in something of what they viewed as value. Like, I'm being really careful about the words that I choose, because again, we're talking about Nazis. So let's not, you know, try to paint that the Empire has anything good about it. But you took the worst parts of the Empire, you put them in, you know, a pot, and you let them simmer for 20 years as they built up this anger and stuff. And it wasn't going to end well. It was never going to end well. And that's, you know, like, Snoke is not worse than Palpatine, I wouldn't say. And Kylo Ren is not worse than Vader. So the head of the Empire is way worse than what we got with the First Order. But if you look at just what we've been focusing on, which is the intention, the message behind why they're doing what they're doing, all of those things, it comes down to, like, for the Empire, I think it started for a lot of people as we want to bring peace and order to the galaxy. And then it got more and more corrupted as such movements formed out of or formed by people as terrible as Palpatine always end up becoming. Whereas the founding philosophy of the First Order was pure hate and a desire for power. There was no, like, even Hux, you know, he talks about, you know, bringing down the Republic and stuff. It's never about trying to make the galaxy better. It's always about putting them in power and destroying anybody who stands in their way. And that's evil at its core.
Yeah. And, you know, it kind of sucks because I do think Vader could easily be misinterpreted as one of these villains where it's just like, there's no need. You know, I think that because of his alignment with the Empire, who then became the First Order, I think Vader's reasons for being who he is very often get lost on us. And it becomes kind of the joke of just like, you know, they wouldn't let him on the council. You know, he misses his mom. I think there's so many things that get overlooked. And really, it's Vader Immortal on the Oculus. If anyone has a virtual reality headset and you're lucky enough to have the chance to play Vader Immortal, you gotta do it. It's one of the best Star Wars entities, in my opinion. But it's because it is the constant reminder of why Anakin became Vader. And it's not, oh, I hate the Jedi. It's not, oh, I miss my mom. It's, I want to figure out how to stop people from dying. And that in and of itself, not a terrible thing. You know, it's not the best idea. It's not, you know, there's going to be some long-term consequences. But I think that Vader is someone who, because of his alignment with the Empire and because of what he turned out to be, is so often misrepresented for what his actual desires are. And it's not until Vader Immortal that game in a three-part series really drove home that even as Vader, he never, ever, ever stopped trying to find a way to resurrect Padme and keep people from dying.
Yeah, and it comes back to, you know, what Lucas talked about the difference between the light side and the dark side, and it's selfishness versus selflessness. If Anakin had been trying to stop people from dying out of selflessness, we're having a very different conversation, but he was doing it out of selfishness. Mm. And you can say the same thing about, like, Kylo. Like, he was confused and broken and hurt and living in the shadow of his parents and had a tremendous weight on his shoulder or his shoulders. And instead of becoming more selfless because of that and saying, well, let's make it not about me. Maybe that's about the perception that people have about me and not about who I actually am. And maybe I should become who I actually want to be and ignore people's perceptions. He became more selfish. And selfishness brews selfishness, and selflessness brews more selflessness. Like, you don't start out, you know, selfless and become more selfish. You start out selfish and you become more selfish. Anakin was, like, even though he had great qualities about him that got torn down and manipulated, like, let's not pretend that he wanted to fly that pod race just for Qui-Gon. Like, he wanted to race for himself. So there was always a little bit of ego involved with Anakin, even when he was younger. And that was still there when he was Vader. You know, that side of him got brought out more and more, and so it caused more and more of that to come out. If the selfless bits of him had come out more and more, it would have been more of that. And so the intention behind everything, like, the actions decide, you know, at the end of the day, whether something was right or wrong, you know, the actions that you decide to take, but it's the intentions behind it that really help you understand it and understand that person and their motivation and what they were striving for, even if they didn't go about it in the best way possible.
Yeah, I think that the point of the selfishness versus selflessness I don't know how you said it in a row so many times so well, because I struggle to say it once. But I think that point also really perfectly shows the difference between groups like separatists and the First Order, right? The First Order was 100% out of selfishness, whereas the separatist movement really wasn't. You know, you probably could go as far as to say it was selfless of them to, you know, for whatever reasons these planets and these societies had for joining the movement, trying to create better lives for their future. Yeah, that's pretty selfless of them. And it's a scary thing too, right? It's almost brave of them to do it. So I think when you put it in those terms, you can even go as far as to say, like, yeah, of course the First Order is the least vindicated. But yeah, you might even be able to make the argument the separatists, even though they're the antagonist of our stories, they are the antagonist of the prequels. They might not really be villains, right? They might not be the bad guys. They're just the antagonist.
I mean, there's some bad, you know, they created a weapon that only wiped out organic material and not droids. You know, their leadership and the people that they chose kind of determined how we view the separatists. But when you think about the reasons behind why it was started, I think it's not purely selfless. Like, we're not talking about a Luke or a Leia here where it's not about them at all and it's about helping people.
Yeah. But it's not that purity of it. Yeah.
They did give up positions of power within the Republic to go break off and start this movement, and that's not an easy thing to do. Even if you think you're going to get more power out of that, like if that's your goal, like giving up a guaranteed dollar is no easy thing to do. And so there has to be a little bit of selflessness within that. And so again, like it never really hit me until right now that there really are two different versions of the separatists. There's the Sith separatists, which is Dooku and Palpatine and the corporations. And then there's the, we'll call them the selfless separatists of Nina Bonteri and her camp, who were really trying to make the galaxy better and didn't necessarily want to end the Republic, but wanted people to realize that the Republic was not who they thought it was and could be more.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. But I know Brandon and I would love, for those of you listening, let us know what you think, right? Are we totally off base and maybe we're missing something absolutely insane about the separatists and they're not quite as relatable as we think? Are we not giving the First Order enough credit? But we'd love to hear, out of any groups, out of any individuals, who do you think is really the villain that can kind of be forgiven, if not redeemed? So best place to do that is going to be over on our Facebook page, Star Wars Clashing Sabers. Or if you want to follow us on Instagram, you can do that over at Sith Talk. But B, do you want to give everyone a little rundown on where to find you and what Clashing Sabers is really all about?
Yeah, so you can always find us across socials at Clashing Sabers on Instagram, on TikTok, Twixer, whatever the hell Twitter is anymore. All of those places.
I was gonna say, what is Twixer?
I don't know. It's very confusing. We're Clashing Sabers across all of those platforms. And then, you know, like you mentioned, we're more than a podcast. We are also a nonprofit that puts Star Wars books into classrooms across the country. And so if you want to support that mission, 100% of the money that you donate goes directly towards buying and shipping books to these teachers. We've been able to send a couple of boxes in 2024 already, which has been fantastic. And you can do that by going over to our Patreon and donating there, and you get bonus episodes. You get a great community. And you get to support a fantastic mission. Like I said, you guys who are listening, you're the diehards. You read Star Wars books growing up, or you read Star Wars books now, and you know the impact that they can have. And so we're just trying to spread that a little bit more. Anything you can do to help us in that is greatly appreciated.
Yeah, and certainly if you want to join our Patreon, that's always the best and most direct way to really help us in that goal. So that's it for our show. Thank you for joining. And Brandon, may the force be with you.
Always.
All Clashing Sabers productions are the intellectual property of the Clashing Sabers Network and ClashingSabers.net. All licensed sounds and images are the property of their respective copyright holders and are used for informational and educational purposes only. For more information on our nonprofit or to nominate a teacher, go to ClashingSabers.net. For questions or inquiries, please email us at ClashingSabersNetwork@gmail.com.
You're just going to walk away?